Dine Online's live Clubland Q&A is just 1 minute away.
This is Mark Stein, back after four sellout voyages for the fifth annual Mark Stein Cruise. If you like the sound of April in Portugal and Spain on the fabulous new ship, the Celebrity Apex, well, you'll be at the apex of celebrity for our traditional week of sun, sea and civilizational collapse. I'll have special guests from both sides of the Atlantic, including a reunion of all your favourite telly presenters from the glory days of GB News, who've since been sacked. And we'll do all the things you like about the Mark Stein Show and Stein Online, but close up and on water. More details at steinonline.com or markstinecruise.com.
The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now. Here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. November 13th, 2024. It is 3 p.m. in the swamp, where the Republican wing of the world's greatest deliberative body has just elected a new leader, and where it has been confirmed that the selfsame Republican Party has taken the House of Representatives. 4 p.m. in the beautiful maritime provinces of Comolas, Canada. 4:30 p.m. in fabulous Newfoundland and beyond the Americas. 8 p.m. at Lambeth Palace in London, where the Archbishop of Canterbury has resigned in disgrace, as our Mark Stein cruise mate Calvin Robinson tweets, "Make the Church of England Christian again." 9 p.m. in Paris, 10 p.m. in Jerusalem, where Mike Huckabee is headed as U.S. ambassador. 11 p.m. in Moscow, half past 11 in Tehran, for all you Newfoundlanders who moved to Iran in solidarity with the half-hour time zone. 1:45 in Kathmandu, for all you Iranians who moved to Nepal to check out the quarter-hour time zone. 2 a.m. in the British Indian Ocean Territory, the Chagos Islands, whose transfer to Mauritian sovereignty Donald Trump considers a threat to American security, and he and his team are trying to figure out a way to block it. Pathetic, don't you think, that a crown colony among His Majesty's dominions, and the pathetic Prime Minister of the United Kingdom wants to give it away, and it takes the Yanks to come in and try to prevent it. But just pathetic. Just completely pathetic. 4 a.m. in Singapore and Honkers. Sorry about that. 7 a.m. in Sydney and Melbourne. 9 a.m. in Auckland. And an even more civilized hour for the Kippers and Kedgeree in His Majesty's dominions eastward across the Pacific, assuming they also haven't been delivered into the hands of others. Exactly 50 years ago, November 13th, 1974, a lab technician at Kerr McGee's plutonium production plant near Crescent, Oklahoma, a young lady called Karen Silkwood, attended a union meeting after her testimony to the Atomic Energy Commission about safety concerns at the plant had led to positive test results for plutonium contamination at her home. She had spoken to a New York Times reporter and promised to show him the documents she had with her at that meeting. But on the way home, her Honda Civic veered onto the shoulder, hit a concrete culvert, and the steering wheel was smashed through her chest and impaled her up against the roof. She died at the scene. The documents were not in the car. Karen Silkwood was 28. Meryl Streep played her a few years later in the film, and it set her on the start of a spectacularly successful career. As I said, we have a new Republican leader in the Senate, a man called John Thune from South Dakota. We wouldn't have Trump about to begin his second term if it had been left to Mr. Thune. He said he wanted options other than Trump. Matter of fact, we wouldn't have had a Trump first term if it had been left to this Thune guy. When the Access Hollywood grab 'em by the whatnot tape emerged, Thune called for Trump to step down in favour of Mike Pence. Oh, come on. You remember Mike Pence? He was... He was vice president under Trump. Is that what he was? You know where Pence was today, is today? He was at the Dispatch post-election summit. That's the Dispatch as founded by Never Trumpers Steve Hayes and Jonah Goldberg. The problem I have with Thune is that he's one of those Republicans, very common, probably about 97% of them, who accept the left's framing of everything, and that whether it's January the 6th or that Access Hollywood tape, and thus he's always ready to pre-cave, which I don't find encouraging. George Pereira, that's the interesting thing. It's this whole move by Mitch McConnell and his move during the that late intervention during the election campaign, where he said he was going to have to be far harder on Republicans than he was on Democrats. Trump is basically an independent guy, and the guys around him this time round are independents, like seriously independent, like Elon Musk or Vivek Ramaswamy or whoever. And they're going to have to push their agenda through in the teeth of serious opposition from the two so-called part, the both so-called parties. George Pereira says, "Mark, our oh so special and completely non-political scientific elites are said to be working on time zones on the moon." That will correspond in some way to time zones on the Earth. That sounds awfully like time zone colonialism to me. Why? And if this happens, can we expect the time at Tranquility Base to be included in the recitation of the time zones? No. We're not doing that until Elon Musk opens his first condo development on Mars, which I think he says is going to be in about 18 months' time. So we'll introduce the Martian time zones then. Chris Hall says, "Hi, Mark, did you have any interactions with Pete Hegseth when you used to hang out at Fox?" I didn't hang out at Fox. That makes me sound like I'm just sort of a pathetic figure trying to break into show business. I only was there when I had reason to be there. I'm guessing that he can't be worse than the current so-called leadership at the Pentagon. Did I have any interactions with Pete Hegseth? We've had quite a lot of questions about Pete Hegseth. Heather says, "Hi, Mark. As an Army veteran who joined in 2004, as you say, back when I thought they were serious, and separated in 2022, I say with some confidence that you don't know how right you are about Thoroughly Modern Millie and the gang and their destruction of the military. What are your thoughts on Trump's choice of Pete Hegseth? I swear I hear your voice when I see the photo of Hegseth flexing his We the People tattoo next to the photo of Lloyd Austin wearing his double masks and plastic face covering." Ha! Ah, yes, Darth Visor. I'm sure he scares everyone when he gets out of his airplane. He's at the top of the steps and he's wearing that stupid Perspex visor. I've known Peter a long time now, and you know, we have a laugh when we're on the curvy couch together, or when I think I brought my dog and he brought his cat along to whatever that 7 o'clock show was that used to be the warm-up act for Tucker. And I think I was doing it 1 week and he was doing the next week. And so people think if you're just on television and you're having a good time, you must be a nitwit. I've certainly been accused of that. And Peter has been accused of that. But I think he's actually a serious and strategic thinker. He's read all my books. And I know he doesn't just say that the way that wanker Paul Ryan does. He actually will, you know, cite some passage, you know, 300 pages into After America or something that he that has stayed with him. So he's a serious guy, and he's serious about, you know, there are a lot of just rah-rah guys when it comes to the military at Fox. You know, they don't really, they just do the thank you for your service routine. He thinks about it in more serious ways. He's a combat veteran, and the stories of what he and others have had to do in places out there on the edge of the map when the idiots back in Washington have no idea how to win a war, that all they know is to order up another 30,000 copies of whatever it's called, Three Cups of Tea, that fraudulent book that the Pentagon fell for. The Pentagon, by the end, were the only people who believed in that fraudulent book. You know, he was supposed to, I forget the name of the guy who wrote it, but he was supposed to have built schoolhouses or something all over Africa. He hadn't built anything. It was just a racket. But the Pentagon fell for the racket because the Pentagon's a racket. And these generals are terrible, and Pete Hegseth certainly gets that. People, because he, it's just, you know, the TV stuff he's good at. I think in a way he's been, they don't use him terribly effectively at Fox, and I think he sort of deserved better than he gets there. But he's also hunky and dishy when he came to do one of those Fox and Friends, you know, where they go to a diner for breakfast, and he came to do that. And there were ladies in my employ who drove miles to see him in that diner for breakfast. And because of all that, then they say, oh, yeah, he doesn't have the credibility to be Secretary of Defense. This is completely ridiculous. No, it's not, actually. Because the one thing that can be said for certain is that the people who have run the Department of Defense, the people who have been on the Joint Chiefs of Staff, have been rubbish. And we're now getting to the stage where where an actual American victory in war is passing beyond living memory. Now, that's true for a lot of countries. You know, a lot of countries aren't very good at the old warmongering. But they're not, they don't account for 40% of the planet's military budget. It's so pathetic. You've got the left on the one hand, so set them aside. Then you've got the sort of rah-rah right, who that guy Kagan, who wrote that stupid book, and he takes into account every aspect of the you know, the United States military is dominant, it's technologically dominant, it's dominant in manpower, it's dominant in this, it's dominant, yeah, it's dominant in everything except the ability to win anything. And Pete gets that, and he understands there's got, the first thing you have to do is a huge clear out of all these parade generals. I mean, he would be doing America a great service if he just announced an 80% cut in the medals budget. Because these guys look strutting around like Latin American caudillo. They look pathetic. How can you have that? It's not a small point the way that complete ass Thoroughly Modern Millie dresses. I mean, when the whole issue is the inability to impose your will Will. That's another thing, Pete. Pete and I had, we'd have this thing where we'd be doing, we'd be on air laughing about, he's a huge fan of Titanic. So for a while I used to sing that Celine Dion song, the first couple of lines, if it ever came up. And so we do all that sort of trivia, and then we're down in the green room, and he's talking about the absence of Will in the Pentagon. He's a serious guy. Now, the one thing they say is he hasn't run a huge federal bureaucracy, and that you need to be able to run a huge federal bureaucracy. And that may be true. It may be true if we were talking about conventional bureaucracies with relatively normal levels of spending. But the fact is, no one... I'll give you an example of that. Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld... Now, he had an advantage over Pete because he'd run the Department of Defense in the 1970s under Gerald Ford, and then George W. Bush brought him back a quarter century later to do it all over again. So he certainly knew how that bureaucracy ran. And I went to see him at the Pentagon back when I used to have access to the corridors of power, and he showed me around, and he just sort of happened to mention, and I don't like that whole vibe there, the way you've got the Dunkin' Donuts and the Burger King and the whole thing all in at the sort of food court level there. It's sort of, the whole thing is designed to disconnect everybody in the building from the rhythms of normal life. So I don't like that place. And but he was like affable and friendly and sort of showing me this and showing me that. And I asked him a question about what it was like with the bureaucracy. And he said to me, the trouble is they won't give you money for anything you want to do or need to do. They only give you money for things you shouldn't be doing. And he was, as I said, he was showing me around. And he came to, and we're going back almost 20 years now, so about 15 years after the end of the Cold War, we came to the section of the building where guys show up first thing every morning and war game tank battles on the East German plain against the Warsaw Pact. This is like 15 years after the countries you're supposed to be fighting, East Germany and the Soviet Union, have ceased to exist. they haven't ceased to exist in terms of the bureaucracy. So, you know, Rumsfeld had certainly had the advantage on Pete in having run the thing a quarter century earlier. But these places develop a life of their own. And seeing how the insiders run the joint, seeing how corrupt it is, and seeing how it's just a racket for lobbyists who are, oh, a highly decorated four-star general. Wait, yeah, can you show me a general who isn't highly decorated, who's just, say, medium decorated? Do you have just, like, a medium decorated general? Or is it, like, another round of ribbons? Oh, the ribbons are on me, guys. The American military is completely dysfunctional. And as I said the other day, and it needs somebody serious to take hold of it. As I said the other day, these generals have to be gotten rid of. It's outrageous that you can lose, you know, whatever the thing, whatever that number is that the, I'm a bit fogged in by various things at the moment. So if I forget a fact or can't remember the right century in which something happened, do forgive me. I dosed myself up a bit excessively to do this show. But the and I've forgotten what I was saying here. Oh yeah, nobody paid a price at all. Nobody has been fired or even demoted. You know, I'm old school on this. I like the way the French used to do it, where you marched into the courtyard and they rip your epaulets off you. But they don't do that after Afghanistan. And, you know, the idea that it was some sort, oh, it was such an efficient operation. We managed to drone the seven most photogenic moppets in Kabul on our way out the door. It's a disgusting fiasco. No one has paid any price for that. And I think the mass clear, for a start, America spends too much. The basic cost benefit analysis actually tells you that when you're spending this much money, you're just making things worse. So they could certainly fire a whole bunch of generals and not replace them and see how that works for a bit. But I certainly hope that I think Pete is an all the interesting appointments are the ones that have. Thinking outside the box, or the what? Because Trump is signaling that he doesn't want to be subverted by the guys in the room, which is what happened to him first time round. David in Singapore, he says, looks like Trump is 1,000 times more organized than last time. They are making announcements at an incredible rate of knots and really exerting influence already. And it looks like he has learned many lessons, some great people on board. The obvious question is, do you think he can pull it off? Hit rewind when the train is plunging towards the ground, having careered over the cliff, and rejuvenate America and restore it back to sanity and world leadership. And David also says, your thoughts on the Trump appointments, please. Rubio stands out to me as inconsistent with the MAGA agenda. Do you agree? Well, Marco Rubio is not who he was in 2016. I thought he was an almost laughably idiotic and inept presidential candidate back then. And he got knocked out. But the interesting thing is he became pro. Some people became pro-Trump in order to knife him. When his back was turned. And Rubio didn't do that. For example, today, in today's vote, he voted for Rick Scott, the least worst of the three offering themselves for the Senate leadership. There were only 13. And Rubio was one of the 13. So it's true that he's got a foot in both camps. But on the other hand, you know, that's better than Mitch McConnell, who's got 2 feet in the anti-Trump camp and doesn't care who knows it. And Ryan has 2 feet in the anti-Trump camp. That's to say, if you're wondering why nothing got accomplished when the Republicans had control of the Oval Office, the House and the Senate, it's because Ryan and McConnell, it's not that they don't care for Trump, it's that they completely despise the tens of millions of Republican voters. And they don't care if you lose a Republican voters know it. And as I said, I think Trump gets that he's fighting. He's basically fighting the entirety of Washington. But when you say he seems more organized than last time, well, what's happened last time round? He was a successful businessman and telly host who decided to take a flyer on running for president. And because the other options were such garbage, as Joe Biden would say, he won. And he hadn't really expected to win. And he hadn't, he had no idea of the scale of the task that confronted him. Well, what's changed about that? What's changed about that is because he tried to change Washington, they sued him, they indicted him, they tried him, they convicted him. Half these judges were determined to jail him. And when none of that worked, they shot at him. So he's been shot at. And the idea that he'd just want to be one of those seat-filling presidents, You know, you don't sort of, oh, who was that guy between Reagan and Clinton again? He didn't go through all that. He didn't go through getting a bullet in his ear in order to be one of those place fillers. So I think he is serious. The other thing you have to do is you have to be, now he said he'd like to make recess appointments rather than have his Secretary of State tied up in the Senate, you know, for a year and a half or whatever, which is what happened last time. And I don't know whether they'll give him that, but I think the thing he has to do is just like find, he doesn't have to play by the rules because they perverted the rules to shoot at him. So he's got a free hand to do what he thinks is necessary. And I hope he does it from minute one of day one. He just signals no. And I repeat what I said. Who cares about an inauguration? Does he, after what he's been through, does he want to actually sit there watching 57,000 fire trucks go by? No, it's rubbish. It's un-Republican, it's unbecoming, and he should just say, no, we're getting down to business from the first minute. Skip the inauguration. It's crap and unwatchable. Nobody who's, you know, what do they say about politics? It's what's the Christopher Hitchens line? It's show business for ugly people. Well, the inauguration is show business for directors and impresarios who couldn't hold down summer stock in Dead Moose Junction. So he shouldn't be wasting his time with that. Chris Davis says, Chris threw me a lovely party in London after that terrible day at the English High Court. Chris says, Mark, I hope you are well. Fair to say Trump has come out of the gates flying and he means business. The idea of a Department of Government Efficiency headed by Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy is a promise made and a promise kept, rare in modern politics. By limiting their roles to Independence Day 2026, yeah, that's America's, what do you call it? Sesquibicentennial? Is that right? Whatever it is. Now, that's one of the benefits of this Trump victory, that he's going to get to preside over America's 250th birthday party. Now, do you want to be observing your 250th birthday party with $70 trillion in debt or, you know, the Ukraine war dragging on for whatever? Or do you want actually to have some real cause for celebration on 4th of July 2026? And I think they're a bit like him. Elon Musk is the richest guy on the planet. So he doesn't need to do this. And again, there's no reason for him to just get... He's been at Mar-a-Lago continuously since election night. So he's on the team. And again, he's the richest guy in the world. So he could be just, you know, hanging out at Davos or flying around with Bill Gates, investing in the world's biggest mosquito farm to unleash them on the planet for who knows what. He wouldn't be doing this. This is, you know, small potatoes to him. If you're just going to be a Mitch McConnell type. You know, Mitch McConnell is, whatever he is, the longest-serving Senate party leader in American history. And what's he got to show for it? You know, Elon Musk doesn't want to waste his life like that. Vivek Ramaswamy, it's the same kind of thing. They're only doing this. They're not like the grubby little guys on the take who just, like, oh, I'm going to become Deputy Assistant Undersecretary of the Department of the Interior, and maybe some mysterious Chinaman will offer me a lot of money. They don't need any of that. They're doing this because they want to save America, and we need people who are prepared to do that. Frank Gallenstein says, Hi, Mark, I'm very interested in your thoughts on Trump's pick for Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth. Do you know him during your time at Fox News? My son, who served in the U.S. Army's 82nd Airborne and did tours in Kosovo and Kuwait, was quite pumped. Well, he should be quite pumped. Yeah, I'm surprised. I think I did a 40th birthday greeting for Pete just after the COVID got going. Incidentally, they say he's too young because he's full of boyish charm. But in fact, Rumsfeld was younger than him during Rumsfeld's first tour at the Department of Defense. The only difference is that, 40 is the new 17 or whatever. So 40-year-olds now don't look like 40-year-olds did in 1977. But I did I can't remember. We had a big cake with 40 candles on, I think. And it was just after the COVID got going. So I was there standing in, I worked out this little bit of physical comedy where you're trying to blow the candles out with a COVID compliant face mask on, and the whole thing goes up in flames and I wind up having to throw it in the lake. That's probably still out there somewhere on the internet. Pete is, like I said, you know, you don't judge a guy because, you know, TV is TV. So you're never really talking about what you think you ought to be talking about. And what the great thing about Pete is that he's a thinker. He's a very strategic thinker, and there's been none of that among the Joint Chiefs of Staff for a very long time. A massive clear out and a hunt for new talent do a lot of good. Neil Hartley says, Mark, I'm a new founder member as of today and a longtime reader of your books and consumer of your wisdom. I live in the UK and no longer believe in our justice and associated democratic systems. Do you think our freedoms are best protected by trying to affect change through these systems or by disengaging and giving them the middle finger? Well, I won't talk about my own experience of English justice, but I do think of, I think I mentioned this earlier today, Alison Pearson, who I first worked with I won't actually say how long ago. It's a bit ungallant if you're referring to a lady, but, and she's married to a guy I've known for 40 years, and she's on Remembrance Day. She's got all her black garb out. She's got her poppy brooch that she wears for the Remembrance Day services and things. And the coppers knock on the door and they want to interview her about a tweet she tweeted over a year ago. Now, the Essex police, I think it is, are insisting that this is, in fact, a criminal matter. These people should not be able to walk safely in the streets. I'm often, people get, people say, oh, I've known my village constable for 30 years, he's a delightful, yeah, well, good luck to you. I've known, or I've interacted with, as our first questioner asked me about Pete Hegseth, I've interacted with the corrupt men who did nothing while English girls were gang raped on an industrial scale in their cities. The British police are evil. And there again, it's like the Joint Chiefs of Staff. No one has paid any price for twitting around Afghanistan for 20 years while your men get their legs blown off. And then at the end you say, we're giving you back more territory than you controlled in the fall of 2001, and as a bonus, we're leaving you all this equipment, so you're now the eighth or ninth biggest military on the planet. They don't care. They don't see the point of all the helicopters and all, because they defeated the great Satan with fertilizer, because that's how crap he is, the great Satan. He doesn't live up to his name. And none of those guys paid any price for it. I get annoyed about this. I get annoyed because of the sad stories Not the thoroughly modern Millie, you know, with medals down to your scrotum end. That's fine and dandy. It works for him. He's getting all these big speaking fees now. He's in demand. He's on the board of this. He's on the board of that. He's having a fabulous life for just getting Americans killed and maimed to no purpose. He shouldn't be acceptable in polite society, especially when he's wearing his garbage medals, his participation ribbons, participation in fiasco. But I think of the guy, just broken down losers he never gives a thought to, who are wobbling around with both arms and one leg missing and living on food stamps in northern New Hampshire. You know, and the ones who can take that for a bit and then are driven to suicide. These people are, in the same way the British Constabulary are evil. They've ruined the lives. You know, when we have Sammy Woodhouse and Samantha Smith, who are both going to be on the Mark Steyn cruise. They're not typical, you know. They're indomitable survivors of a hell they should never have had to go through. And they're still, you know, as you know, many of you will have seen Samantha Smith when the first time she was on our show. And then she called up the following day to say that the West Mercia police had just been round to banging on her door, demanding to know why she was giving interviews to GB News. So I said, oh, let's get her back on to talk about that. And these are evil, these are institutionally evil places. And I don't believe that any change can come. I believe they're beyond reform. The FBI is beyond reform. The Department of Justice is beyond reform. It has to be broken up in America. And likewise, I think most of these constabularies should be dissolved and replaced with something other. And I blame the Tories, who's this thing, these phrases they have, like non-crime hate incident. The police are supposed to investigate crimes. That's what they do. They don't get into disputes with, like this one wanker talking to Alison Pearson today. She calls, so I can't know who my accuser is. And the guy looks down at his notes and said, oh, he's not the, this person is not the accuser, they're the victim. Oh, right. So it's a non-crime hate incident, but it's got a victim, which is normally a role that someone plays in a crime. It's absolutely perverted basic principles of justice. And it's all very well going on about two-tier care, but it was the waste of time, decade and a half of conservative party rule that let all this stuff take hold in the imagination. Absolutely disgust. And I take your point. You know, about giving them, it's not about giving them the middle finger, but it's about the other aspect of this two-tier world we live in is, as you know, at the same time as they were saying that you couldn't have granny round for Thanksgiving because of COVID, at the same time they were letting mobs go rampaging through the streets because, as the science community decided in some big round-robin letter they all signed, racism is a public health issue. So that's great. So they can all, because racism is a public health issue, you have to stay indoors and can't see granny for Thanksgiving, and they get to rampage through the streets, lighting up Wendy's and police stations and anything else that takes their fancy. And John O'Sullivan made this point on the Mark Steyn Show a couple of years ago. He said this unequal treatment in violence, because, you know, Black Lives Matter and Antifa are seen as the shock troops of progressivism. So Kamala Harris says, it's absolutely necessary that they keep going. Well, you're going to have to adopt the same tactics, because just say voting every few years and then sitting back and watching the useless Republican Party squander your victory, or relying on an unequal justice system and bent coppers to correct the many injustices in the land isn't going to work. So it's going to, at the very minimum, it's going to need widespread civil disobedience. And if they are really determined to do things like this, that actually prosecute a Telegraph columnist for a tweet, then actually I think at a certain point, you know, you don't have a lot of options short of violent revolution. A cheery thought to begin on with. This is Mark Steyn's Clubland Q&A, live around the planet. Oh, speaking of Mark Steyn, here is Mark Steyn himself to tell you all about his weekend music show. Hey, this is Mark Steyn. Did you enjoy last month's Commonwealth Conference? Well, if so, and you'd like to see Samoa of Samoa, that we can do. Also, a Sinatra sextet featuring Frank and Quincy Jones down the decades, and an insistent earworm that will wreck the coming week for you. On the Town, Saturday at 5, Serenade Radio. Yeah, and 5 p.m. London time is 6 p.m. in Western Europe. That is 12 midday North American Eastern. Mark Steyn, live around the planet. It is 20 to 4 Eastern. That is 20 to 9 Greenwich Mean Time. A little behind, a lot ahead, according to where you chance to be on this turbulent earth. Alison Castellina, who has the most mellifluous name in the Mark Steyn Club. Alison says UK police have just indicated that the alleged ex-post by Alison Pearson is being looked into as a criminal matter. What would be the implications, do you think, if they charge her? The implication, well, it isn't an implication. There is approved speech. This is, whenever people start dancing on a pin about the line where you draw the, it's just, no, we're not, I had all this, I can't believe I'm still talking about this complete garbage. I wish I'd been sliced in two by a logging truck 25, 30 years ago, to be honest. But this line I got familiar with, where all the reasonable people, this is when it started, it didn't stay that way for long, thank God, but all the reasonable people, when I had my difficulties 15 years ago with the Canadian Human Rights Commission, the CBC would interview all these people. We're not saying, Mark Steyn, of course, is entitled to his opinions, and we have free speech in Canada. It's just a question of where you draw the line. Where you draw the line. And you should never play that game. I mean, I could easily, well, what do you mean, where do you draw the line? This book was a number one bestseller in Canada, so it's not some fringe thing. And if you're saying that, we draw the line, so this number one bestseller has to be bad. You know, the minute you play the drawing the line game, you're doing what that Pratt Thune does, and you're allowing the left's framing to dominate. No, the point of free speech is because people don't agree on where to draw the line. I mean, I'd like never to hear a word from Whoopi Goldberg ever again, but I don't think that's a reasonable position. So the minute you're the point is, free speech exists for all the stuff you think is over the line, for all the stuff you disapprove of. That's the only point of it. So it's for all the hate speech. It's for the speech you hate. And so if they can actually say, you know, obviously if Alison Pearson can be, and she's going to be spending, you know, a lot of money now. She's going to have fancy pants lawyers and all the rest. I don't need, that's another thing I don't want to talk about. I'd rather go back to being sliced in two by the logging truck in the mid-90s. That's I find that a cheerier subject. Then what happened? Obviously, they do this pour encourager les autres. You know, Maclean's magazine, for example, would never publish the piece it published that led to those human rights suits, even though we won, even though we got the law repealed, and that actually should be the aim here. We should get these guys can afford to harass Allison because they don't actually solve any crimes. The advantage of that, again, as I think I said this morning, is the clear-up rate is about 1.4%. I went through it all with Palm Sandu on our show a year or two back. Because certain crimes are not even investigated now, and you'll know this if you live in certain American cities, people don't even bother reporting them. So if somebody steals your cell phone in the street, or if someone breaks into your car, someone steals your bicycle from out of the front garden, whatever, none of those crimes, half those crimes now aren't reported, because everyone knows the police won't come round, won't take a victim statement, like they do with someone upset about Allison's tweet. And so you could actually abolish every constabulary in the UK, the only difference would be for that 1.4% of crimes that they do, I would think, rather on the stopped clock basis, manage to solve. But they're doing this because a guy, Starmer, is a totalitarian. You know this from what he did with those so-called rioters in the summer, where they were right about the guy who killed those little girls. They were quite right. He has the Al Qaeda handbook on how to kill a lot of people. He was manufacturing ricin at his home, right? But this is just a Rwandan Christian with some mental health issues. Starmer lied to tens of millions of people. And then he put the guys who were in the ballpark of what was really going on, he punished them by putting them in jail. He's a totalitarian. He has no regard for... And again, it goes back to another thing they made a big fuss about him. Jimmy Savile, who for non-Britons, it was the big star pedo at the Beeb. I may have to revive my beloved song, Pedos at the Beeb, exchanging glances. I'm sorry, I got a sore throat, so I can't give it the full whack today. But he was the star pedo at the Beeb, decade in, decade out. And Starmer basically ensured that he went to his grave without being troubled by any of this. And that's the point, because Jimmy Savile was in the club and you're not. And so these far-right losers, you know, he decided on that day to... He knew within hours that this guy had the Al-Qaeda handbook and was manufacturing ricin. But he decided he'd keep that to himself so he could put all these people in jail for crossing him. And he'd be... And Allison, incidentally, the mainstream news coverage of the COVID thing was... I came in at the tail end of it, whenever it was that we started the GB News iteration of the Mark Stein show. So the whole thing had been going on for about a year and a half. Allison was actually one of the very few quote-unquote mainstream people in the British press. Now, on the telly and on the radio, you're regulated by Ofcom. That's not supposed to be an issue in the newspapers. But the newspapers are all on the take from the government because the government was subsidising, paying for all these full-page ads and everything. They were essentially buying the silence of columnists. And they did it very successfully to the point where Andrew Neil was, among many others, was saying that the unvaccinated should be ostracized from society and all the rest of it. And Allison was one of the very few to take a strong line on the on what was going on during the COVID regime. But however bad you think it is now, unless Elon Musk, and Elon Musk actually should, the European Union is threatening to, like, they arrested the guy from Telegram or whatever it was. They put him in a jail cell. They're serious about crushing your right to speak. If you think the big problem with the Western world is that public discourse has shriveled to the point where there's one permitted point of view on climate change, on mass immigration and the Ukraine war and all kinds of other things, well, they don't think so. They think they've only done, you know, 7% of what they need to do. So it's going to take someone like Elon Musk to absolutely smash these guys. And Trump should support that. Trump shouldn't pretend to be friends with a wanker like Keir Starmer. He should actually be saying, he should not only take back the Chagos Islands, make them an American state, but he should actually say to Starmer that you can't have a special relationship when... you are actually everything they accuse me of being. You're the totalitarian, it's going to take a lot. It's going to take a lot of serious resistance to this. And Alison has been, you know, this is not a battle she sought. The last time I sort of paid any attention to Alison, she was writing Chick Lit and doing very nicely at it. But it's precisely because she has been effective that they're going after her. Because the thing is, oh, wait a minute, Keir Starmer's taken out this big shot Telegraph columnist. Yeah, so if you're just somebody, you know, writing freelance articles and submitting them here and there, or if you're somebody who just goes on the sofa and yaks about things on Sunday morning telly, you don't want to end up like Alison has. That's the lesson they're teaching. Mary B writes, given what's going on in the UK with putting people in jail for tweets, should we here in the US offer asylum for anyone wishing to flee that totalitarian regime? You know, skedaddling out of Afghanistan and then within days, it's decided that apparently 97% of the Afghan population were employed as NATO translators. It's incredible. It's their number one business, the translation business. So they've all flown to America, and then all these NATO translators actually need translators of their own because it turns out they don't speak any English. So I'm not generally in. I'm in favour of people fixing their own countries. You can't have everybody on the planet moving to the least worst country. And that's certainly true. Have you ever been sitting on a nice sidewalk cafe in some continental city when the footy hooligans come rampaging around the corner? There goes the neighbourhood. I'm not sure you'd necessarily want them all moving into your nice suburban cul-de-sac. However, I do think, looking at this long term, that keeping the Chagos Islands, keeping the British Indian Ocean Territory, which for those of you who used to play Know Your Ensigns when we did that, Mark Levin made his flesh creep. He hated that. But when we used to play Know Your Ensigns, the British Indian Ocean Territory, Diego Garcia and all that, has the best ensign. It's a fantastic ensign that I'll be sad to see that go. But they should hang on to the Chagos Islands. I think there's several dozen. I think it's 60 something islands, and they should use that to resettle the few remaining Anglo Celts in the British Isles, when the rest of the joint has just been completely taken over by jihadist gang rapists and all the rest. Owen Morgan says, in the UK, or at least in England, gas boilers are to be banned in new homes from 2027. Yeah, if you're planning on buying an extra cardigan to get you through the winter, that's 2027. That's just 2 years away now. Britain's Labour government is committed to the building of, what is this, 300,000 or is it 200,000? I'm having a bit of problem with my eyesight. 300,000 houses a year. Since the government doesn't actually build houses and would probably construct them at Dunwich if it did, that number of houses is conjured from thin air. People who make heat pumps, the unreliable, expensive machinery which will supposedly replace boilers, admit that they couldn't produce the requisite number anyway. No, this is... I love all this. We need to build 300,000 new houses. I was shocked, actually. I was in England. I had a reunion with some old friends I'd worked with many years ago. A few weeks back, I think I mentioned this before, but I was just there for a couple of days. I found it extremely stressful because I was actually shocked at how much more congested rural England was from my memories of it. And it's not surprising when you're importing people at the rate both rotten, corrupt parties are. And then they say, oh, we need to build more houses because young people can't get on the housing ladder now. No, nobody can get on. Nobody except people who arrive on the southern shore of England and are then ushered into free, expensive hotel accommodation. Nobody. And then you've got places like in the East End. Last time I walked through the East End of London, it'd be a terrace house that would have maybe three bedrooms. The amount of garbage piled up in the front garden, so-called, the front rubbish dump, was enough for, if 32 people were living in that house, which very often they are. When that tower block in North Kensington or wherever it was, caught fire and all those people died. One of the reasons so many people died is because so many more people were living in that building than should have been, sleeping seven to a room or whatever. If you read Anne Coulter's book on immigration, which she wrote at the time she and Trump were getting on very well. So he had her come and introduce her at events and things. So we're talking 2015, 2016. But she makes the point that, if you have open borders, it wrecks everything. It affects the fertility rate because young married couples can't afford to get accommodation of sufficient size to raise children in. So they put off having children. So your fertility rate collapses. Your education system collapses because it's focused on teaching the simplest of words to kids from 75 different countries who flooded into your schools in nothing flat. It wrecks everything. The idea that we need to build 300,000 new homes. Oh, yeah. And you know what? We probably need to import some more migrants to work in the construction industry and build those homes, 300,000 new homes. And then we'll need another 300,000 for all those construction workers we bring in. I haven't even finished Owen's lead. He says, are our politicians now telling us that whatever is claimed to be going wrong is our fault, so we must suffer justice for our sins? We've used central heating, so we must sit in the cold and the dark. Is anything which people like or desire, decent schooling, well-maintained roads, access to competent health care, to be denied on political grounds? I'd note that there is no reason for education, highways or hospitals to be under government control. Indeed. And they're trying to teach you a lesson. The reason they're turning Britain, America, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, on and on. The reason they're turning these countries into third world countries is because they want you to live like third world people. That's the beginning and end of it. I want to see these. I hope Tom Homan manages to deport some people on January 20th. He's Trump's new border czar. And he's I've had him on when I guest hosted for Tucker and things. He's a tough hombre. Is the H silent there? Is a tough hombre or a tough hombre? I can't remember now. I'm over medicated. But that is until that's reversed, that's your future. That's your future. You look at all these towns, you know, towns of 3,000 people, and they move 3,000 Haitians into the town. So you're a semi-Haitian town now. You were a conventional, you had a conventional American demographic profile. You're now semi-Haitian. Well, how long do you think before you're fully Haitian? And at the moment, they're just picking out, oh, we've got a small town in Ohio we can screw over. Oh, we've got a small town in Pennsylvania we can screw over. Eventually, that will be the whole country, because that's the object. Keith Farrell says, between Welby and Starmer, we have primate change and climate change. Oh, you should be one of the 47 writers on those lame-ass American late-night comedy shows. You know, what's the guy called? Colbert? Stephen Colbert and Jimmy? Jimmy, who is it? There's two Jimmy. I can never tell them apart because they're both rubbish. But you should be one of the 40... Primate change and climate change. One refers to a man... Oh, you're just warming up. One refers to a man fiddling with kids, while the other highlights a man fiddling while its citizens can't burn wood, eat meat or dairy. We are being given a deadline while the labour eunuch tells us nobody will be told what they can't do. Am I right to be sceptical? Yes. Who was it? One of these labour guys, this just came out in the last couple of days, says that Keir Starmer needs to do to the farmers what Maggie Thatcher did to the miners. In other words, the farmers are the enemy now, right? And what is the Joni Mitchell song? They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum, and charged the people $1.50 just to see them. They took all the farms and put them in a farm museum, and they're going to change the... charge the people $1.50 just to see him. Gary Alexander, our music maven, writes, question, January the 6th is still being litigated, yelled about by lefties in press and panels ad nauseum. But can we now say there was a jury verdict, the November the 5th vote, and the majority voted mox nix on Jan 6. It doesn't matter to us. Pelosi and her Republican allies had their kangaroo court and impeachment trial, but the jury matters most. So, in short, shut up on January the 6th already. You know, eventually, because if none of it were, if you know, you can do the same thing over and over. If you're Looney Tunes, if you're Bugs Bunny and Yosemite Sam, or if you're Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote, because they're geniuses. So they can do the six, it's basically the same plot every day, but they are geniuses who can make each 6 minutes, and you enjoy it. So you know Wile E. Coyote isn't going to get to eat Roadrunner. You know Sylvester isn't going to get to eat Tweety. And you know that Yosemite Sam will clomp about, but that Bugs just has to put on a dress and they play, oh, you beautiful doll, you great big beauty, and Yosemite Sam's scheme falls apart. They're geniuses. The people who've bored the pants off us for 4 years are not. And if they were to say, oh, well, we're going to indict Trump, and this time we're really going to get him. This time, Wile E. Coyote is going to get the Trump runner. They're boring the pants off everybody. This is what's interesting is they just double down on it. Nobody cares for the most part about any of the stuff the Democrats talk about. But this one Democrat who was trying to sort of dial the trans madness back, just dial the trans sanity, just back a notch. He was okay with 98% of it, but just he wanted to dial it back a bit. They've now all said Tufts University. I think I took my dog there once. Tufts University now won't have anything to do with this. They're not accepting any of his staff or internships or anything like that. They've basically ostracized this congressman because he thinks the pronoun thing has gone a bit too far. So this is an elite thing. And you can get away with it if Trump's running a gangbusters economy. If everybody's making more money, you can afford to worry about all this. You can afford to think that the most pressing issue facing the civilized world is pronouns. But everything's garbage now. So they have to decide, do we want to wreck the food supply, wreck the broader supply chain, shut down all the farms, make everybody eat bugs, or do we want to just keep talking about racism and sexism? They suffered a humiliating defeat with just about every identifiable demographic. And they're still saying, oh, well, it's just white supremacy and racism and sexism. Yeah, all the increased black vote for Trump, the increased Hispanic vote for Trump, the increased Muslim vote for Trump, the increased Jewish vote for Trump, the increased female vote for Trump. That just shows how sexist and racist these people are. It's just they're not taking it well. They're not taking it well at all. Dear Mark, who's this from? Pat Evers. Dear Mark, I saw the other day that the owner of a Latino radio station in Pennsylvania claimed that Latino men didn't vote for the vice president because they come from a culture of male chauvinism. Ah, yes, this is just what we were talking about. I would not know whether the cultural claim is true, but if it's true, should the left have pondered that side effect before importing 8 million more people who might think the same way? This reminds me of the activists who were shocked to find that the newest residents of Hamtramck, I never pronounce this right, do I? Michigan, but it's the big Muslim burg in Michigan, didn't much care for rainbow flags. No, they're not flying the pride flag. Eventually, if you import enough people, they don't need to integrate or assimilate because there's enough of them just to do their own thing, like not flying pride flags. There's always, you know, whenever you import people on the scale America does or most of the rest of the West, you're changing the country. So certain things are going to go. Amy Schumer, is she still a thing? I don't really know any of the current celebrities, but Amy Schumer, I think, was she the one who had the, she was very anti-Trump and whatever for a while. I don't really know anything about Amy Schumer. It's a mystery to me. But the only thing, the only bit of shtick I know from her was a joke she used to do. I used to date Hispanic men, and then I decided I preferred consensual sex. I think that's the only thing. I don't even know whether it's true or not. But it struck me as a spirited line. And then, of course, once people had dug this joke up from 20, 30, 47 years ago, she had to go on a big groveling apology tour. But that's the point. As I said, I have no idea whether that's true or not. But I do know that now, for example, there are all these people, like some that town in Ohio, where the kid got killed because the Haitian guy or whoever it was driving without a license. There's nothing surprising about any of this. If your first act, if your very first act in your new country is a crime, like breaking in and just living there without following the law, for any of you who remember what that was, why would one suppose that the other laws are going to be any more important to you than the fundamental defining disregard for the law that enabled you to be living in the place? It's not difficult. It's not difficult, this stuff. You know, Democrats moved. They didn't move in sufficient numbers. But this is what it's like. You live somewhere, you know, New Hampshire is a pleasant state, or it used to be until all the drugs and all the stuff. But I take it there are still nice places where all those, you know, NPR listening women of a certain age live. And that's swell. But they won't be. Because the trend will eventually touch you too. And you'll be living in a third world dump. And you can't, it's simply, no, and oh yes, well, it's so, we're caring people. So we think the thing to do is, when you have some crappy country in Asia or Africa or South America where nothing works, we think the thing to do is take all the talented people there and move them to our country to be the doctors and nurses and all the rest of it. So they've lost all their best and brightest in those countries because we're so compassionate. No, at some point, that's the story of human progress, that the people who live in these countries make these countries better. Unless you have the good fortune to be colonized by the British Empire. But otherwise, and that's the American thing, like I use my British Empire line just there. Or if I say, if George III were running in this election, he'd be the small government candidate. Whenever I use those lines, I always get a bit of pushback from people who say, well, no, we decided we didn't need you guys. So we just took it and said, this is our country and we're going to decide what our country is going to be and we're going to make it the greatest country in the world. Well, why would you deny that opportunity to Haiti? Why would you deny that opportunity to South Sudan? Why would you deny it to Somalia? This idea that, oh, yes, well, we're so compassionate. There are 8 billion people on the planet and we'd like them all to show, because we are serious virtue signalers. So we'd like all 8 billion people on the planet to come and live here. And then there won't be any problems in any of the rest of the planet because there'll be nobody living there. The people moved at this last election and we should be grateful for that. We should be grateful for that. Certainly the next 4 years have to be a huge success, because they'll find someone. They had an absolutely awful stinker of a candidate this time. About the worst, pathetic, an affirmative action beneficiary, because some wankers at the top of the Democrat Party decided that America was pining for a half-wit Montreal schoolgirl to be president. It's completely stupid. But they're not going to be that, unless they are irredeemable, as Hillary would say, they're not going to be that stupid again next time. So lay the ground for the next election on all the days between the elections, because a lot more people need to do what those blacks and Hispanics and Jews and Muslims and suburban women and all the rest of it did last week. They need, because these people are not converting fast enough, and that's a problem. But the plan of all the clever people like Bill Gates is to turn you into the citizen of a third world dump, and that plan is quite well advanced. This has been Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A. I apologize for my voice being a bit under par. But I didn't want to miss this show, so I'm glad I was at least able to stick it out this long. But that's going to do it for today. Do make sure you check out our regular Thursday date with Laura's Links. Laura Rosen-Cohen rounds up the internet as only she can. And she has a lot of fans out there who really appreciate this stuff. Especially some of the human grace stuff she manages to find for that category. And on that subject, an old and dear friend of mine whose show I always enjoyed going on, that's Dennis Prager. He had a bad fall today, and he's in a bad way, and we hope you will spare a thought in your prayers and wish the best for Dennis, because he doesn't just have a great show, but he set up a great institution with that Prager University, and certainly what he's going through is a tough break, and we hope you will want to keep him in your prayers over the coming days. If you're still toying with the pros and cons of joining the Mark Stein Club, do come on in. The water's fine. And don't forget, for the Stein shy chum in your life, there's a Mark Stein Club gift membership with his or her name on it. Stay safe, stay free, stay well.
Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. Rights reserved.